Hello everyone, this is the Indian Sinophilist Dev Puranik, and I want to talk to you today about the decoy and handler team, right? So let me just say this before I sort of get into the topic. What's happening is, although we want to show the dog that the handler and the decoy, the handler and the dog is a team, right? And who are sort of fighting against the decoy, right? But in reality, obviously, the training decoy and the handler are a team who are making the dog believe, you know, that he's on the handler's team and, you know, creating the situation where, you know, the development of the dog is possible, right? So there are a lot of responsibilities that fall on the handler as well. What tends to happen is, since we've already sort of made up our mind most times that the responsibility of developing a dog falls on the decoy, and it does, largely that's true, but it, you know, that does not mean that there are not things that a handler might end up doing that will influence the development of a dog, right? So both of them, the handler and the decoy, has to act as a team, and they have to, and not just that they have to do the right job, but they have to be able to coordinate their coordinate whatever their individual responsibilities at that time are. And if that coordination falls into place, that is when, you know, you will get like a steady development in your work, right? So let me sort of divide this into a couple of things, right? Let's sort of try and look at things that a handler might do that might influence the development of a dog in bite work, right? And let's divide them into what a handler might do during a bite work session, right? And what a handler might do outside of a session, right? Because like a lot of people will be like, you know, if bite work is not going on, how can I end up doing something that will influence bite work? Yeah, you can, like, you know, you might not even realize it, but, you know, you as a handler, you know, the dog lives with you, the dog is basically, you know, your dog, right? His life apart from that that one session is entirely just with you and maybe your family or whoever else is in the dog's life. But there are a lot of things that you might be doing otherwise outside of bite work that might influence bite work as well, right? So the first thing that I want to talk to you about is, you get a puppy home, right? A lot of people who are new to working dogs, like in our country, there are going to be a lot of people who are pretty new to this, and they aren't very in favor of crate training, right? Like, I'm all for, you know, your working dog being, you know, your family dog, your pet dog, whatever, and him, you know, laying around on your bed outside of work and just enjoying, you know, just being your house dog, right? What I'm saying is, when I want to crate train a young working dog or a puppy, I might eventually, like, I want to fade away the crate, but that's, I want to start his life with me with crate training, and I'll tell you why. You're going to have a working puppy, right? It's going to be a little more energetic than average. It's going to want to do things more often than an average puppy, right? Maybe it, like, you know, it's playing around and gets into your curtains or something like that, grabs at your curtains, start pulling at it, you know. You have to either, if you're like really, really new to this, maybe you correct the puppy. If you know that, okay, this might have an adverse effect, you might just maybe lift the puppy off or something of that sort. You might try and do something to, you know, to get the puppy let go of the curtains. which is technically the right thing to do. Like maybe you offer food or something like that. But the problem is, you do it once or twice, that's fine by me. But if your dog is going to get into some things like that, whatever, right? Biting a curtain, your furniture, climbing up on stuff, whatever it might be. If your puppy is going to get into such stuff all the time and you're going to have to remove it from that situation all the time, be it by, redirecting it towards something, be it by, offering food, whatever, it's going to have some sort of an adverse effect on it, right? There is a possibility that if you do this every single time, depending on what kind of a dog, you've ended up with, maybe you internalize the pup a bit too much. And now when you take it out on the field and want to do a bite work session, the pup wants to turn around and check with you. Not even necessarily because you've corrected him, but even because, maybe it expects a reward from behind, from the handler, right? Keep in mind that the intensity of the rewarding feeling that is coming through bite work hasn't been built yet, okay? Like, again, this might affect some, it may not affect some puppies too, but do you want to take that chance, right? So that's one thing. So what I would recommend is crate train your pups as soon as you get them, okay? I don't mean like shove them in a crate and, that's it. That's not what I'm saying. Like, there is a procedure to that. Look that up, okay? I'll try and do a podcast on it, But it basically involves, making your pup feel that the crate is its home and it's, a place to rest and whatnot, right? So try and do that. When you're busy with, whatever it is that you do, your work or whatever it might be, that's when the pup should be resting in the crate, right? When you take the pup out, you should be actively engaging with the puppy, so that it's not left to its own devices and it's not getting into trouble all the time and you're not having to lift it off stuff and, you're not having to suppress some of the possession that your puppy naturally has, okay? So, yeah, because we need that for bite work, right? So, yeah, do that, right? The next thing I want to talk about, a lot of times people don't realize, is you might be, maybe playing tug with your young dog or puppy or whatever, right? It might be with a tug, it might be with a small pillow, whatever it might be, right? What you have to understand is you're still reinforcing grips. Like, you may not intend to, but, it's still possible that, you might end up doing it and you might end up reinforcing the wrong kind of grips. Do you understand that? Like, I mean, see, imagine, like, if, like, let's say we are doing a sport like PSA and we are really hoping for, like, really pushy grips. Like, what I mean by pushy grips is when your dog grabs onto your hand or leg, whatever, right? The dog has to dig deep into the grips, like, not pull at the grips, like, dig deep into the grips. That's what we ideally want, right? So, but what might happen is if you're playing with a pillow or a tug or whatever, and maybe you're doing it for obedience, like as a reward for obedience. Maybe you're, not even doing for obedience, you're just doing it to play with your dog, right? Like just engagement or just, just to have fun. But maybe at that point in time, the dog's winning when the dog is pulling, right? You might be creating a habit of pulling on the grip, right? And what might happen is, since, the decoy, assuming that, oh, okay, you know that preserving the grips right now in the foundational stages is a big aspect of this, so you might not be doing something like that. The decoy, assuming this, might just feel helpless as to, we've been reinforcing pushy grips right from the beginning. The pup seemed to have at a younger age all the genetic propensity towards pushing and all that. It did not have any tendency to pull, and he has no idea where this pulling all of a sudden comes from. until maybe one day, you know, you happen to mention just by chance that, well, you know what, we were playing tug or, and you know, this is how I rewarded him or whatever. And that's when it clicks that, oh, okay, you've been reinforcing the pull, right? It happens so many times, right? Like, I know so many decoys here will relate to this. Yeah. So apart from, you know, reinforcing, like, you know, like when I say reinforcing incorrectly, you know, the pull is still a smaller problem. I mean, it's still a pretty big problem, I would say, but it's, I mean, it's fine as long as, like, if you're doing PSA, for example, as long as your grips are full, then they don't really deduct points for, you know, pulling, right? They want pushing grips, but I mean, it's fine if your dog is pulling as long as the grips are full. But then the other side of it is, do you know, like, did you check when you, like, when the dog won the tug or the pillow, if the dog was biting the tug from the molars? Did you check that? Did you know that this is essential? Because if the dog's winning on a frontal grip, now what's a frontal grip is like, okay, so something like this, like, you know, this is the mouth and the mouth's not getting filled up. If you can see that, that's a frontal grip, right? So what we want essentially is for the mouth to be filled up like that, like, see, like this, right? And if you're reinforcing, let's say, grips that aren't really full, and you, I mean, again, like I said, you might not be looking to reinforce that, but you might end up doing it, okay? You might not even know that you're doing it, right? So if you're doing that, you're like, you know, with this, you may end up undoing some of the work that you and the decoy together are doing, and maybe you're paying for the sessions. And irrespective of all that, I mean, you know, it's a lot of hard work that you're putting into your dog, and maybe you're undoing it without even knowing it, right? And if you're doing it at a foundational stage, sometimes it gets really, really difficult to, you know, like, really make it 100% okay again. Sometimes it does get difficult like that, you know. So yeah, be careful about that. The like another most, like, really, really common thing that I've seen, especially with, like, really, really new working dog people, see, like, someone gets into a bite sport or some sort of a protection related discipline, right? Let's say they get a Malinois puppy. What tends to happen is Malinois pups, even the good ones, might show sometimes a little bit of sharp, like, you know, a little bit of sharpness, or like a little bit of a, for the lack of a better word, a little bit of a nervy kind of a reaction towards certain stimuli in certain situations, right? Like, what I mean to say is, sometimes you might see that, okay, you're out for a walk in the evening and it's like dim light, and there is, you know, there is a person walking at the side of the road, like, alone, like, in a very quiet place, right? What might happen is your dog, your puppy, might look at that person, and it might show you this aggressive response towards that, right? Now, what happens is someone really, really new, who's just gotten into, you know, protection, you know, protection dogs, bite sports, whatever, they get really excited by the fact that, oh, my pup is already showing an aggressive response towards something. And, you know, because, I mean, that's how their interpretation about things are, right? Like, if like, they're doing protection, like, be it for sport or whatever, and this is a young dog showing an aggressive response, it, you know, in their minds, it's amazing, right? What you're still doing is, it's essentially, you know, it's essentially a stressful situation that the pups ended up in, right? If this is happening too often, you're exposing the pup to, you know, stress a little too regularly in its life. And I'm not, like, when I'm saying exposing, I mean, it's not bad to expose, but if that exposure is done in order to get the puppy, neutral towards it, then that's a different story altogether, right? But I've seen like new people, instead of trying to get your puppy neutral towards it, they, you know, it just sort of gives them this feeling that, wow, this is, you know, so awesome that my pup is being aggressive. And, you know, and they might even want to enhance that, you know, that reaction. Now, what's happening is if it's happening too often, it's not going to be good for the pup. You're sort of creating a little, for the lack of a better word, nervousness as such. Also, it's a very dangerous kind of a situation to be in because the person or whatever it is that the pup is viewing as the stimulus for this aggression, right? Whatever it's feeling threatened by, like, see, a decoy, when we do something like this with a trained decoy, the decoy knows just how much to push, when to back off, how regularly should we do something like this. There, like, you know, since we are creating a level of stress in the dog's mind, there is also a stress relief mechanism that the decoy knows about, right? And I mean, at least a good decoy should know about it, right? But in this situation, all of that is not present. Plus, that person has no clue that, you know, that this is a pup in training. And I mean, it's just a person walking by. He might just be walking by you. And after a certain point, when the distance between the two of you is reduced, I mean, your dog is still a puppy, right? It's fine. It's throwing out an aggressive response to this, but there's going to be a point at which it's going to be a little too much for the dog, and it's going to learn to avoid the situation and run away, right? Don't put your dog in a situation like that. Don't let it learn that avoidance is a solution for a situation like this. I've seen people do something like that a couple of times, and you know, when your dog experiences something like this, it takes a lot to come out from there, you know. So yeah, I mean, try, if you see those reactions on your dog, don't encourage those reactions. I'm not saying like correct those reactions or anything like that. I'm saying set up, like, talk to your decoys, talk to your club members, talk to mentors who can help you out, and get them to help you out about, you know, to sort of know about how to expose your puppy to, like, you know, similar stimuli in a way that you'll try and get them neutral to it, you know, not the other way around, right? So now coming to, you know, things that happened during a session of bite work, where, you know, coordination between the decoy and the handler is absolutely essential, right? Okay, so just to give you a very simple example, when we are training outs, right? Like, who is deciding when do we ask the dog to out? Right? Like, most times, if you think about it, the more experienced person takes that call, right? Like, if the decoy is more experienced than the handler, usually the decoy will tell you, right? If the handler is more experienced, then the handler will, you know, obviously tell the decoy to freeze up or whatever needs to be done, right? Now, in my case, like, what's happened a lot of times is, you know, I need my handlers obviously to pay attention to their dogs, yes, because, you know, they are encouraging their dog in the middle of a fight. If their dog is biting me, you know, they're encouraging their dog, they may be petting them and, you know, just getting them used to the idea that, you know, them being close to them is, you know, them supporting them or being in their corner, right? So, but what happens a lot of times is, like, I need my handlers to, every now and then, they have to, you know, even, let's say I'm a handler right now, I'm petting my dog and I'm like, good boy, super, whatever it might be. And I have to, every few seconds, look up to my decoy if, you know, if he has to give me any instructions, right? And I'll tell you why. Like, I have a lot of times new handlers who like are locked, like their vision is locked onto their dogs. Now the thing is, I cannot, like, a lot of times if, you know, we've decided, okay, we are training outs right now. Let's say I have a leg sleeve on and the dog is biting me here. And, you know, like some of my club members are going to, you know, they'll know who they are, you know, when they listen to this. So the dog's biting a leg sleeve. And maybe what I want to do is this, if you can see this, like just this. So the dog's not really, you know, looking at it, but the handler can do it, or I can just be, you know, I can just do this. So, you know, the handler knows that, you know, right now I expect them to give an out command, right? And then we'll see how to make it happen, or, you know, what stage of, you know, doing outs is the dog at right now, right? So what happens is my handler is like, he's not looking at me. He's so like stuck onto his dog that what's going to happen is I'm going to have to verbally tell the handler to out the dog, right? Now, what's happening is there is going to be, like, what's going to happen is every time I speak to the handler, right, and the handler says out. Now, you know how they say Pavlov is always sitting on your shoulder, right? Classical conditioning is always happening. So if I say something, and every time I say something, the handler asks the dog to out, the next time I say something which is not related to outing, I might just be communicating something else to the handler, and we see that their dog outs, you know? Because, you know, the dog is anticipating that every time I say something, the decoy, like the handler, is going to ask the dog to out. Now, yeah, there are a number of ways that I can try and bypass this. Like, I can keep saying stuff, right? Like, I can say different things which don't tell the handler to out. You know, like, I can drown that signal between other things that I say so that the dog doesn't catch it, right? I can do stuff like that, but the easier way to do it is just that the dog, just that the handler, you know, pays attention to me, and I can just give a sign that the dog does not see or hear or whatever, and, you know, the dog just feels that, you know, the signal for the out is coming from the handler and the handler only, right? Easier way. And this basically applies to everything. I mean, just out is just an easier example, but it basically applies to everything in, okay, so like in higher levels of PSA, right? Like, a lot of times what ends up happening is, you know, decoys run at a handler and dog team, like the dog is on heel, right? And decoys run at them yelling and shouting, and then the handler says whatever the bite command is, right? Again, what you're doing is you're classically conditioning your bite command to the decoy's agitation, right? Now, you'll see slowly the dog is going to respond to that agitation and just leave when he hears the agitation, which is fine to a certain level. But like in certain sport, like in PSA, after a certain level, you want the dog to go only when it's told to go by the handler. You don't want the dog to go, based on the agitation from the decoy, right? So in such a situation, when you're training, even though you might want the decoy to agitate, right? But you'll have to ensure that that agitation comes after the bite command is given. Like, so I'll say, like for my dog, I'll say pakin. And once the pakin happens, then the decoy starts agitating, right? So you have to be careful about, you know, this coordination. And it looks like a pretty simple thing. A lot of times, you know, when you have like decoys and handlers either who are new to each other, who are new to, you know, how the other person trains, one of them is less experienced, right? Sometimes one of them is less experienced and doesn't know it. Sometimes both of them are less experienced, you know, this like this lack in coordination can create a lot of like, you know, create a lot of weird things that you don't catch till it's, you know, it's been reinforced for quite a long time and it's sort of becoming a habit. Now you have to work on it all over again, you know. So yeah, this kind of a coordination is very, very important, right? So, you know, this kind of coordination between the handler and the decoy in these situations are very important. So pay attention to, you know, these things, see if they are happening correctly or not. So, like what I've seen a lot of times is that people realize that something, you know, like this uncoordinated way of it happening has taken place. They realize it like maybe a month or two into it happening regularly, right? So be careful about that. The next thing is, like, sometimes I see handler sensitivity in the dogs. Like, what is handler sensitivity? Like, if you've trained bite work, even a little bit, I'm sure you might have seen this. Like, a handler holds on to the dog, the dog's barking, he sends the dog to bite the decoy, whatever it might be, a sleeve, it might be a suit, whatever, right? And the dog goes and bites, and the handler comes to grab the leash, right? And just as the handler comes to grab the leash, okay, so let's say I'm the decoy and the dog's biting me here, or let's say the dog's biting me on my forearm, and the handler comes to grab the leash and the dog keeps, you know, moving away. Like, it's not letting go of the grip necessarily, but it's sort of trying to move away from the handler all the time. You can see that the dog's uncomfortable when, you know, the handler's approaching. Sometimes it may not be that much, but you can see, like, if you can just look into my eyes, it's like, you know, like, if I'm a dog, I'm like, you know, trying to see from my peripheral vision from where the handler's approaching. Like, this is like, because of this being a little subtle, maybe new decoys, definitely new handlers won't catch it, right? But yeah, what it is the dog doesn't trust the handler right now. Like, okay, don't take it too far to a point where, like, you know, people become like, what do you mean? Like, my dog doesn't trust me. Like, we have an amazing relationship and all that. I mean, what I mean is, in that context, like, let's say there is a sleeve on my arm and the dog and the decoy are fighting for the sleeve. There is value in that sleeve in terms of winning this encounter with the decoy. Does the dog feel like you're in its corner? Or does the dog feel like it needs to compete with you for the sleeve as well? That is what I'm talking about, right? A lot of times it might happen because maybe in the beginning, for what we do is we choke dogs off because, you know, outs haven't been taught yet, right? So maybe the way in which it was done was maybe slightly incorrect, where the dogs were, you know, sort of being like, just the handler approaching me means that the handler is going to choke me off from my grip and sort of, you know, I'll lose possession of, you know, what I've won. Okay. It might be that, because maybe in the beginning the handler did not approach the dog and just encourage the dog and pet it and be on the dog's side. And maybe after the dog won, maybe, you know, things were just like handlers were going through the motions where, you know, they were just like right away choking the dog off, something like that. Again, what ends up happening in these situations, it, to an extent, it will depend on the dog that is in front of you. Some dogs may not show it as much. Some dogs may show a lot of it, right? There's that. Then let's assume we've sort of started moving towards, how do you say, like after the dog is won, let's say I have a sleeve on, the dog bites the sleeve, I let this dog win the sleeve, the dog's running around with the sleeve, you know, the handler has a leash on, and now the handler is going to out the dog, dog will drop the leash, and the next round between the dog and the decoy will start. We're not choking the dog off here, we are asking the dog to out, right? In this situation, are you effectively conveying to the dog as a team? Because, I mean, yes, I mean, the dog's going to look at it as the handler conveying it, but it's going to happen through both the handler and the decoy acting in unison. Are you able to convey to the dog effectively that, okay, you've won this round and do your victory lap or whatever it is, like show off your, you know, that you've won, all that. Enjoy the moment. Awesome. Amazing. We want our dogs to do that. That's how they get confident. And once that is done, okay, now be ready for the next round. Like the dead sleeve in your mouth. Now, after you've had your victory lap, now it doesn't really mean anything, does it? So what I'll give you is, if you drop the sleeve on the ground, I'll give you a chance to defeat the decoy again, right? And maybe you can have this victorious feeling that you had, that you love so much. Maybe you can have this feeling again, right? If you effectively convey this as a handler and decoy team to your dog, the dog will readily, you know, drop it on the ground. You know, he will not feel like he has to save the sleeve from you. All right. And the next round will start without, you know, it being like a power struggle between the dog and the handler, because I've seen that a lot too. Okay. Because what ends up happening is, you know, the dog's running around and at some point the dog starts pushing the sleeve onto the ground and, you know, maybe like tearing into the sleeve and, you know, just sort of removing its, like, you know, sort of pouring out its frustration onto the dead sleeve that it has, right? Or any kind of dead equipment that is there. And the handler is struggling to, you know, get hold of the dog, like maybe catch hold of the harness or the agitation collar or whatever it might be. And the dog spinning around to keep away from the handler. And then it starts realizing that, oh, you know, the longer I do this, the longer I can keep the sleeve. And I also feel that, of course, like this adds a little bit to the handler sensitivity in this situation, of course. Then you have to correct the dog a little more than what would have otherwise been necessary in order to start the next round. You've unnecessarily created induced stress in the dog, you know, which might show in the next round when he's fighting with the decoy. You know, that's one thing. The other thing is that the dog's, you know, destroying equipment, which is pretty expensive. Like, I don't want dogs to destroy, you know, expensive equipment, right? You know, and, you know, the dog, you know, keeps learning about, like, you know, it sort of goes into this circle where, you know, every time the dog wins, it becomes a struggle between the handler and the dog to, you know, sort of start the next round, right? You maybe end up tiring out your dog just by, like, a lot more by just in this part of your session, you know, which should have ideally just been, you say out, the dog drops the sleeve, looks at the decoy because he knows, you know, I can drop the sleeve and in place of the sleeve, I get my next round with the decoy. And essentially, we want the dog to value the fight with the decoy a lot more than, you know, just the sleeve, right? Like the winning of the sleeve, just like it's you know, like, fine, he can have his victory, like, you know, the victorious feeling, which is nice momentarily, and then he should want to, you know, engage again. He should want an opportunity to have that same feeling again and again. So, right? Like, and this, a lot of times what I've seen is that you end up creating in the dog an obsession for the dead equipment rather than, you know, wanting to fight with the decoy, right? And that's not something we want. So be careful about that. If what I've realized is that handlers get too worked up, like new handlers get too worked up when, like, you know, this starts happening. And, you know, it just becomes more difficult than it needs to be. I think maybe try practicing, you know, however you're going to go about it. There are a number of ways that people like to go about it. whatever way you're comfortable with, whatever way your mentors have taught you, do that. But do that, like try doing it, let's say without a dog, like be really good at it, and then maybe try doing it, you know, on your dog, so that, you know, you know exactly what you're doing, and you know, things don't, like, you know, you don't start losing control of the situation, and then it becomes more and more difficult as we go, right? What I've also seen, similar situations happen in the guard. Like, let's say the dog's biting me, and you say out, and the dog lets go. Like, there's no conflict in the out. The dog outs really well, but why does the dog out really well? It's expecting a rebite, right? Now what happens is, like, you do an out, you get next to the dog, and you heel away, right? A few things are going to happen. Either, like, if you forced a dog to heel away a little too much, either the dog's going in the guard is going to jump away from you, and that's when we see when the handler gets next to the dog and the dog sort of starts circling the decoy, like away, like keeps moving away from the handler like that, you know. So, you know, that is something that, you know, so what I do for this is, or the other thing that, you know, you might also see is that the dog keeps, like, you know, when you sort of approach it into, like, approach the dog from a heel, like into a heel position, the dog might, as you're approaching, might turn back and keep looking at you instead of being intense in the guard. And we don't, like, I don't like dogs not being intense in the guard. It's just, like, irrespective of the points and all that, it just doesn't look nice to me. So what I'm going to try doing is, I will approach the dog, right? And as I'm approaching the dog, we might give the dog a rebite, right? Let's say the next time I might approach and actually get into heel position, I might even touch my dog, but what I want him to do is, as I'm touching him, I still want him to focus at the decoy, and as he's focusing on the decoy, we give him a rebite. So me being next to him in the heel position shouldn't really mean much to my dog, right? Unless I've said the heel command, right? So, and once I've said the heel command, I might heel away just a little bit, and, like, you know, if my dog will take a toy reward from me, awesome. If not, I mean, again, depending on what sport you're doing, one might be recommended more than the other. But, like, you know, if my dog is not willing to take a toy reward from me, because sometimes that'll happen, like, dogs that have tremendous affinity towards the decoy will not, you know, come away from the decoy and take a toy reward, right? They'll be like, no, I want the decoy, right? So, but what you can do is, and I've done that a few times, I heel away, the decoy walks up to me and rewards the dog in heel position, right? So, all I'm saying to the dog is that, you know, if you comply to this, what you wanted will come to you and you'll get it anyway, right? But again, what we need for this is tremendous coordination on the part of the handler and the decoy. Right? Like, it cannot so happen that, like, you know, I walk into the heel and the decoy is expecting me to heel away, and what I'm expecting as a handler is that the decoy offers a rebite. You know, that should not be happening, right? So if you know, like, if the decoy and the handler haven't been working with each other for a very long time, what I would suggest is plan this out. Like, you can actually plan this out, like the first bite, like the first out will have a rebite, the second out will have this, the third out might be when I heal away, whatever it might be, right? Whatever your goal for that session might be, like, plan it out. Okay, so one very, very basic point that I forgot, new handlers, and this is I think, like, every decoy out there who's decoyed for some time will tell you, like, very, 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 very basic, like, what is a post-up, right? Post up means become a post, right? Like, You're literally a post, which means you're not going to move. Your dog might pull you, whatever, whatever, whatever. You're not going to move until I tell you so, right? When your decoy asks you to post up, right? Like, no, 2 inches of movement is not okay. Okay, it's not. Like, you in your mind will be like, I did not move that much. I mean, I don't care. Like, when your decoy asks you to post up, please post up, right? You don't know what the decoy is planning, right? Like, you might have a puppy and you might be like, you know, it's not like my pup's going to hurt the decoy or whatever. But see, I mean, it matters in a lot of things. Maybe something happens, your pup lets go of the grip, okay? Your decoy needs to move back outside of range of the dog, and your decoy needs to tease the dog, you know, your decoy needs to little like tease the dog as to, you know, that you're not getting the grip, so that the dog feels that the next time I have the grip, I have to ensure that I don't let it go, right? To create this feeling, he might have to, because your pup might not let go for, like, you know, it might not let go, and like, it's not that the pup's let go through avoidance or anything, it's just that it happened to maybe slip away, right? So if it slipped away, and you, like, what's going to happen is, if it slipped away, your pup's going to be like, try and be like really fast about it, and if you move forward in that instance, your decoy is not going to be able to make that miss effectively, right? Help him out with it. He's trying to do the best for your dog, right? There are so many handlers that aren't posting, like, all over the world I see this, like, new handlers just won't post up, right? And especially, like, you know, what happens a lot of times is then people, like, will be like, okay, back tie the dog, right? But, like, when I ask you to back tie the dog, what's going to happen is then there's going to be more onus on you to ensure that, you know, to ensure that after the dog is won, like, because, yeah, we can back tie the dog and ensure that, you know, the dog doesn't move an inch, fine. But after the dog is won, the dog's back tied to a post or whatever it might be, right? So you're not going to be able to run around with the dog. So maybe what you're going to have to do is place your hand under the chin and, you know, rub, like, you know, pet the dog on the head and just calm it down. Sometimes handlers won't be like, you know, they excite the dog, the handler, that dog wants to pull away from the handler, the dog might try to shove the equipment into the ground and, like, you know, start tearing it up, you know, stuff like that. So sometimes we have to put an extra line on the dog's collar and remove the back tie line and make them run around and then come back to the back tie, do the whole procedure that we talked about in the last point, connect the back tie line again. So I'm not saying back ties are bad. I mean, it's an amazing, you know, way to work a dog. What I'm saying is it'll create more responsibilities for the handlers now. You know, like, otherwise you just had your dog on a line. All you had to do is, once I let the dog win, you just have to run it around with the sleeve. It was easy enough, right? Now if you're not willing to post up, you're going to create, you know, like things where you have to like work skillfully in other places, right? So yeah, that's another sort of a, you know, problem. If you want your dog to be able to, like, if you want your decoy to be able to work your dog, like, as the dog's developing, like, if you want your decoy to be able to do civil work with your dog, and you know, in a situation where the decoy doesn't expressly ask you to back tie the dog, right? If you want that to happen, earn his trust by posting up really, really well. You know, I mean, ultimately the decoy is putting his life on the line for you and your dog, right? So earn his trust by posting up well, right? Pay attention, because during that particular encounter, that there might be a situation where the decoy might, just in case the decoy feels that right now the dog might benefit from you moving forward, like letting the dog drag you. And if the decoy tells you something like that, I think most times we as decoys will tell you before we started, like even if we feel at that point, we will just give the bite, and the next time we will tell you that this time, you know, I want you to do this. But just in case something like that happens, just be vigilant to, you know, something like an instruction that the decoy might give you on the go. Sometimes it might happen, right? So, you know, if you do that really well, I think, you know, you'll have better results, you know, with your dog, right? There's like one last example that I'm going to, or one last place that I'm going to sort of try and emphasize on. Although there are a lot more places, like I obviously can't mention each and every place where, you know, the handler and decoy coordination is going to be tremendously useful for you. It's just not possible to cover every place, at least in like one podcast, obviously. But like, you know, just some of the things that I've seen in the last few years that, you know, keep happening, right? So one very interesting thing that, you know, I saw in the last few years is, you know, when you send your dog, let's say you ask your dog to alert, right? An alert is essentially the dog going to the end of the line. Let's say you hold a 5-foot leash, right? The dog goes to the end of the 5 feet, pulls on the line, lunges and barks at the decoy, right? And from there, you're going to send the dog, like send the dog to bite the decoy at a distance, right? Sometimes what ends up happening is as the decoy goes further away, right? As the decoy goes further away, dogs in like, because there is a lot of drive that is not finding an outlet, dogs will start moving from side to side as they are barking. Like they're not just lunging, but they're lunging like this and this way, right? Like this and this way, this and this way, right? So they're moving along the curvature of the, you know, of the 5-foot line that you have, right? What ends up happening is, out of habit, maybe without realizing it, the handler lets go of the dog when the dog swung to the right. All right? When do you realize that you've been doing this? Is when you let go of your dog, and irrespective of where you let go of your dog now, the dog sort of turns to the right and takes like a curved path to the decoy. All right, that's when you realize that, oh, okay, something happened. And you may not even realize that, okay, it's happening because, you know, the dog was, you know, sort of going from side to side at the end of the line, right? What do you do in such a situation? Just shorten the line. It's easy enough. Shorten the line and, you know, then send your dog so that, you know, whenever, even if he's trying to go from side to side, I mean, there are a lot of ways and a lot of things that people do in order to negate this. People start in a bark box, where, you know, it's essentially a place which has two walls to the side of the dog, so the dog cannot move from side to side, something like that. But what I've also done in the past is I've held the dog down very close to me so that the dog cannot move, especially when I'm doing sends, right? When we are doing work close up, the decoy can ensure that the dog's pulling straight towards him when he delivers the bite and doesn't deliver the bite when the dog approaches him on a curved path, so that we're not reinforcing that, right? Sometimes you also have like spins, and you know, there are places where this will not matter, right? Like for example, like there will be sports where, you know, in the trial you're never going to have the dog on the end of a line and you know, barking at the decoy. It's not going to happen in certain sports. So, you know, you might not care if the dog spins or, you know, goes from side to side or whatever. But in certain sports, you might. Like, for example, in PSA, in PDC, you have to do an alert, and I don't really want my dog to approach a decoy like this, or I don't want my dog to keep spinning at the end of the line and then hit a decoy. Like, fine, like if your dog does have that habit, it's fine. Like, it's not the end of the world, but it's just very easy to avoid it, right? And the other thing is, let's say you're not doing sport. Let's say you're doing police work. Now, in police, let's say you're doing a building search. What you want is you might be standing at the edge of a door, like, you know, taking cover behind it. And you have to send your dog to alert, like, let's say there's a door here and the dog has to peek through the door and alert there. Now, in this situation, a dog that keeps spinning is like, what are we going to do about that? You know, it just becomes very difficult to explain to the dog what we need from the dog and what is, like, you know, we need from the dog that becomes a tactical advantage for us in that situation. Right. So depending on what you're doing, I mean, this is, again, just one example of things. Right. There are so many things that also, let's say, in real street situations, if your dog is spinning and if your dog is just swinging around and you're behind cover and the dog's out in the open, it's going to be very difficult for you to understand who is the dog locked onto. Right, like if the dog's spinning, there is a person that needs to be bitten. Like if there's a suspect, like this is police work that, you know, I've learned somewhere anyway. But you know, if the dog's basically locked onto a suspect, if there is a suspect in this direction and there is someone, let's say, a few feet to his side, like a dog that goes, like, you know, with a lot of intensity forward towards the person that he intends to bite, you can very easily make that decision as to, okay, the dog's locked onto this person and we can now send the dog, right? If your dog's spinning in this situation, it becomes very difficult to judge if the dog is, you know, locked onto this person or not. You might just let go of the dog and the dog might bite the wrong person, you know? So, you know, that's, you know, depending on what you're doing, this may affect you, may not affect you. So, but like, what are you, like, sometimes, like, a lot of people also cross train. Like, I do PSA as a sport, but I like my dog to have all these abilities of, you know, being able to work on, like, sort of like a police dog, you know. But so, you know, we were just shooting right now and a lizard fell on our director's lap. Sorry for that reaction, right? Anyway, so yeah, so like, not that I'm going to use my dog on the streets or anything like that, but I just feel it's fun to have that ability in my dog, right? So yeah, so I take care right from the beginning that, you know, I don't let such habits develop in my dog. So what I would suggest is have a plan for your dog right from the beginning. Right, so that you take care of these things right from the beginning, because, you know, once these habits form, you know, it just takes a long time to undo them. Some may not be, like, you know, may not be undone correctly, whatever, you know, like. So have a plan right from the beginning, and you know, try and stay as, yeah, I mean, what's going to happen is usually the development of your dog is not going to go exactly according to what you initially planned necessarily, okay? But try and stay as close to it as possible, you know. Plan accordingly, plan for contingencies. Hell, like, you'll need someone experienced, obviously, to help you with this plan. Seek out those experienced people. What I would say is, plan a session. Like, what happens usually, okay, so with my dog, so my director right now is also my decoy. So what we do is, like, for my dog, we might do a bite work session that might last as long as 2 minutes, you know, and we might plan it for 15 minutes or 20 minutes, you know, like, we want, and it may not, like, we might plan for 20 minutes and we might do a 2 minute session, and it may not, those 2 minutes may not go exactly as we envisioned at the end of those 20 minutes, right? But as long as it stays close to it, as long as, you know, we manage to coordinate and bring out what we wanted to bring out and, like, achieve the goal of that session, it's all fine, right? So, but what I've noticed is that's what training starts becoming. It's a lot of planning and the execution is not necessarily that long, right? So, and even more so when, you know, the decoy and handler have not been working together for a very long time, even more so, you know, talk to each other, really get to know what is expected from, like, you know, let the decoy get to know what is expected from him, let the handler know what the decoy expects, and, you know, so on. And then try to execute that, right? And I think that'll make things go a lot more smoothly. Like I said before, there are going to be a lot of other places where maybe either the coordination of the two or just, you know, the individual responsibility of the handler or the decoy will influence, you know, the development of the dog. So many other places, which I, you know, was not able to cover right now. But if you want to ask me about any such thing that, you know, maybe happened to you when you were in the middle of a training session, or something that you noticed with your dog and you think it's happening because of something and you want to have my take on it, feel free to message me on Titanium Canines on Facebook or on Instagram, and I'll try my best to help you out with this, right? I'll be back soon with another episode on another interesting topic. This is the Indian Sinophilist signing off. Bye-bye.